This is the 1895 Podcast, official podcast of Shelburne FC, bringing you news, views and interviews from inside Tolka Park, Dublin's finest since 1895. Here's your host, Stephen Duty.
Hello, welcome back to the 1895 Podcast. It's the official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. Coming up on our maiden voyage of 2024, we'll delve into the transfer activity of the football club. We'll revisit the dramatic finish to last season. We'll chat about an eventful off-season, give our predictions for 2024. We'll have some listener questions. And of course, we will cover the Richie Rankins for the off-season. To do it all with me, the great and wonderful Ben Cleary. Ben, how are you?
I'm great, Duty. Thanks very much for having me. I know... You know, I'm no Darren, but hopefully I can add a certain spin that maybe he wouldn't get. But really excited to be here. As you can probably tell, I can't wait to go through everything. And had a solid think about this. And, you know, I'm pretty confident with my predictions for the year.
We all say that. I went back. I listened to the first episode of last season's pod. And there were some dreadful predictions in there. So it's always pretty bad, to be totally honest. But look, it's content, as the man says. So before we get going, I do want to, on the record, just say thanks to Adam Leonard. He stepped in and took the reins last year when I stepped away. So Adam done a stellar job, as he does with everything he's asked to do within the club. So I just want to put it out there. Adam, I know you're listening. Thanks a million. You bailed me out, you kept the ship afloat, and you were quite happy, I think, to hand it back over. So I think everyone ended up quite happy in the end. But Ben, we should probably start... Actually, no, you know what we'll start with? Just on you, so people are aware, you are not just, as you were once called, the Wish.com version of Darren Cleary. You are, last season, were responsible for an awful lot of social media posts, the TikToks, a lot of the video work. It was under your remit, so how have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been a learning curve. I think if you look at the TikToks especially, you know, they've started off a bit following trends and then we kind of branched off doing our own thing. I've been very blessed with, like, the manager has been incredible and the players have been really receptive of it all. Like, they're so willing to buy in and just say, yeah, we'll do that. So that makes my job incredibly easy. Like, going up the train and getting those few bits, like, it's always a really good place to go. So that's really enjoyable. Just, again, going onto the pitch, getting post-match scenes, shooting stuff. It's all new to me, really. Like, I think I've grown a lot within my own content over the year. I think a lot of it's improved. So yeah, I've been happy with a few of the videos, a few of the TikToks, how they turned out. And I'm just really excited to get started. Like I was saying to Darren earlier, like, I have so many ideas that I want to do and I'm just really excited to get back in and be working with the players, putting stuff out. Because look, don't tell my boss from my full-time job, but it's a lot more enjoyable here. There's a lot of fun stuff, a lot of hustle and bustle. It's different and it's just a really good vibe to be around. So I'm really, really excited to get started. And I've really enjoyed kind of my year as a videographer and content creator for the club.
Don't worry, Mr. Cleary, your secret's safe here. I do want to, for those Riverside listeners that we have, if you see Ben videoing you, we're not trying to criminate you at all. It's just for those kind of videos, those season ticket videos. It's all good stuff that we're videoing you for. So please don't throw anything at Ben, either insults or objects. If you could do that, that would be absolutely fantastic. Ben, last season, look, the nuts and bolts of it, the Reds are back in Europe, which was the remit from that very first training, or that very first preseason friendly that I went to last year in January in the AUL. I collared Jack Moylan for an interview and I asked him what was the goal for the season. And straight away, he said, Europe. Job done. Slightly dramatic, probably, circumstances in the end, the way we did it. But Reds are back in Europe. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. Like, it's just, even to hear it. And I remember, like, I was at the cup final with Darren. We both went And it was just when the goal went in for Bowles, we were just like, calm, relax, we're grand. And I remember sitting beside him there full time. Like, I won't lie, I shed a little tear full time. It's just, it's massive for me. Like, I was very young for 04, and I don't really remember 06. Like, I'm just, I'm not as old as people think I am. So this is kind of going to be my first go around properly. So I'm really excited for it. And I remember we were standing there in the Aviva. Darren had the tweet ready, the Comunicado Oficial for Shells. And I think I have a video of it on my phone of him posting it. And I just was just beaming with happiness. I was just delighted, texting everyone, texting players, friends, family. It was just such a special moment. And it's just, I think outside of the League of Ireland bubble, it would seem so weird if you just look at it under a microscope saying you went to a match of two teams you don't like and you're delighted with the result.
Yeah, it was actually weird, quite weird, because I even seen a lot of people from inside the kind of League of Ireland community that were like, oh, Shells are really milking this, you know, qualifying for Europe. But when you've kind of gone through the ringer as we have for the last few years, it's, I mean, in the mid kind of 2010s, this couldn't have seemed more far away than, like, it just seemed it would never happen. It was impossible, but we got there in the end. It's weird. I actually went to my mother's house, and myself, my dad, my brothers, my nephew, who was just Shells mad now, watched it. And same thing, first goal went in. I was like, oh, no, we're all right here. Don't be worried. Don't be panicking. And by 7 o'clock that night, we were all sitting around checking flights and what would be the cheapest European city to get to, what would be the handiest one to get to. And I'm sure we're not the only ones that were at that kind of thing. But just the kind of on the pitch, like our job that we had to do, I say our job, the players' job that they had to do, didn't make life easy. It's probably fair to say. I had to watch the UCD game at home. Unfortunately, I had something that came up. So that was a tough watch on the phone, I have to be totally honest with you. But I got to share Drogheda away with yourself, with Reggie, with the brother, and a certain Love Island star, actually.
Yeah.
For that as well. That feeling, that just, I wouldn't even say the final whistle, because when we went 3-2 up, that was it. It was done. There was no way Drogheda were coming back at us. But it was just, I don't know, magic. And we hadn't even actually qualified at that stage. It was just felt like something was going to happen, didn't it? It just felt, because of the kind of position Bowles were in at the time, they were a little bit all over the place. It kind of felt, oh yeah, these boys are under pressure now.
Yeah, I think it just, it felt like it was ours. Like, I never felt like, once we got the result in Drogheda, I never felt like this is in our hands, we have it, but it can so easily be taken away. Because I was like, just purely from where they were at that point, and especially after what was said in the ground, I was like, here, we hit, like, we're grand. I'm fairly confident with this. I think we should start planning the flights, as you said.
And it was a funny turnaround, because obviously the stuff with the manager came out quite soon after, from his post-match interview, and, you know, the stuff with the Turks, and it just kind of tarnished it. It didn't tarnish it. I wouldn't go that far, but it was kind of a little bit, oh, here.
There was a bit of a doom and gloom around.
Yeah, there was. And I remember, like, saying to my brother, and he agreed, that I would rather not be in Europe and keep the manager than be in Europe and not have Duffer leading us there. Because it just felt like, I feel like we're going to be perfectly suited to European football. We're hard to beat. There's those little individuals there now that could come up with a bit of magic. It nearly tarnished it, but it didn't quite. But the long and short of that whole drama was probably the ideal scenario for most people, I would have thought. I mean, the Turkish mob left. Mickey O'Rourke stood into that majority shareholder position, or stakeholder, or whatever. I'm no businessman. And he was very quick to correct people, Mickey O'Rourke was, at the fans forum, that he is not the chairman or the owner. He was very, very quick to kind of knock that one out. But keeping the manager, the in-your-head teaser going out the night before his contract was announced, how big, in the grand scheme of things, how big is that for the football club, do you think?
Look, I think what the manager has done is nothing short of amazing. Like, I, for years, and I think you'd be probably the same, you'd be worried at the end of a season if there would be a Shelburne the following year. Just because there was always that certain kind of Shelburne doom and gloom of, like, what are we doing? And, you know, the last few years have been so enjoyable, and, you know, we've had so many great memories. And, you know, you think this season, we're topping it off with our manager, and then all that comes out, and they're like, ah, here we go. Here's the Shelburne I know and love. This is what we're waiting for. This is football heritage. And you're thinking, he's gone. And I remember that car journey back, me, you and Darren piled into the van, and it was grim. It was a bad journey home. Like, usually, despite results, we'd be fairly chipper on drives home, because we have the music going and we're chatting away, and we're just like, well, this is it. This is us done.
Yeah, and the whole thing was, like, this is as shells as it gets. Like, it should have been a case of we're back. Even if we didn't qualify for Europe, Boz had won that cup. Even if we hadn't qualified for Europe, there was still such a good feeling around the place. And, like, it was like we overcame a lot of stuff. Like, I know the whole thing was, like, everyone kind of had an opinion on it. There was a bit of uncertainty, especially around the transfers and stuff. It was like, oh, they're just going to use us as a reserve team. You know, they're going to just throw all these young lads over that they want to get experience. And look, while we're on the subject, it's probably fair to say Will Jarvis and Harry Wood, while they didn't carry us to Europe, like, without Harry Wood and without Will Jarvis, I definitely don't think we qualify in the end.
Yeah, I think, like, when you look at them coming in, the fanfare, especially online, was, there was a lot of hate, and I think people were right to be skeptical. Like, I think it's when you see a deal like that, and you see the whole, they're going to use us as a feeder, it's going to be, they'll take our best players, they'll give us a few of theirs, and it's back and forth. And then immediately that's what happens. They send players over. You're almost like, you know, your hands are in your head and you're sitting there. This is it. This is exactly what we feared. But in fairness to Harry Wood and Will Jarvis, I think they bought into it straight away. Like, I think the manager is that kind of personality that when he gets these players and they see the environment and they see the atmosphere that's created by, you know, the manager, the staff, the rest of the players, it's so easy to buy in and think, you know, this is going to be special. They can do something here.
Well, that brilliant. My whole thing with it at the time was, in such a short space of time, the manager and Joey O'Brien and Davey Mack and Skinner and, like, the whole backroom staff, I just have this trust in them. It was like, no, nobody's going to come in here without the manager approving of it. It's just not going to happen. He's just, like, I'd put my hand up and say I thought it would be more likely that Damien Duff wouldn't be the manager of the football club than I'm signing somebody that he wasn't happy to sign. And I remember the first game Harry Wood was in the squad for was UCD away. And I was standing at the dressing rooms, and he came out, and you could see him. He just kind of walked down the steps and he was looking around. And I would have loved him to have been in his brain at that second just to see what he was thinking. Because UCD is the grimmest place on earth, except Dundalk. And, like, I remember seeing him. He went out to warm up. And a few people around me were like, oh, look at him, he doesn't even care. Look, he won't even warm up. He's just standing down at the corner flag and won't even warm up. And then, I mean, Harry Wood just caught fire. He was just amazing. And in such a short space of time, for him to have the effect he had, I just would have loved to see him come back to get the European campaign out of it and just to, you know, really let him be part of it, because he was such a big part of it. And the other player, I suppose, while we're on it, that, I mean, it's fair to say if we didn't have him, we wouldn't have qualified for Europe, definitely not, was Jack Moylan. And usually when lads go off to England, it's, I would be in the mould of, you know, let him off. You know, it wouldn't be kind of too much skin off my nose. It'd be a very, right, he's gone, let's just move on. But it's very, very sad to see Jack Moylan coming on for Lincoln, I have to be honest.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And look, I love Jack the person, I love Jack the player, and I'm delighted for him furthering his career and him happy. He deserves this. And more than that, he's earned it through what he's done in the last few years. But it is, like, there is just something about it. You're happy, but there's just that pit in your stomach that says, you should be here. I don't know. I'm proud of him, but it is that thing where it's just, I'd love him back.
Yeah, part of you is saying, wouldn't mind this really not working out for him and him being back here in kind of 3 or 4 months' time. Maybe for July would be perfect, but look, he was a great servant. Like, again, for a fella not there all that long, to have the impact he had, it's quite rare, to be fair. So, look, speaking towards the end of last season, obviously, the Women's Premier Division side, runner-up in the league, beaten in heartbreaking circumstances in the Cup Final, and that brought to an end the Noel King era in charge of the women's side in Shelburne Football Club. How would you sum up Noel's tenure with the Women's Premier Division side?
I think, look, in fairness to Noel, he accomplished so much with the side. You know, leagues, back-to-back leagues, on for 3 in a row. He did an awful lot, and he gave an awful lot to the team. So you can only be thankful for what he's done. The players he's brought through is amazing. Like, he was never afraid to look beyond, I suppose, his squad and say, what do we have coming up? And you could see that with the likes of, you know, Hannah Healy, Rebecca Devereux this season, Nia Hannan as well. There's a few that have signed on. Then even before that, like Abby Lark and Jesse Stapleton. And, you know, you look at where those players have gone now and how much they've come on as players with his help as the backroom team. And it's amazing. You do feel bad that it didn't end on a high note. Like, the Cup would have been fantastic. The league, if you have a team like Piemont, they win 17 games, it's going to be hard to beat. To match that, it's going to be hard. So you do feel for him, but an incredible servant for the club, and I think he deserves his plaudits.
It felt like just a kind of a journey that had come to an end, really. That's the way I felt about it anyway. It was just the time had come, everyone kind of went off in their own separate directions. Obviously, it left a vacancy to be filled, and Owen Whirran is the man that stepped into that void. You've kind of gone, I found it really interesting that you've really gone, this is no slight on Noel King by any stretch of the imagination, you've gone from one end of that spectrum to the complete other, as experienced a manager in women's football as you'll find in Noel King, and then you've gone to Owen Whirran, who he's far from inexperienced, but at this level, you would have to say he is inexperienced. Was it a surprise to see such a young manager?
I think it was, and it's not really a knock on Whirran, the manager. It's just, especially with that squad, I would have thought maybe it looked to someone with a bit more experience. But as you know, coaching is such a strange game. Like, it just changes so much. Football isn't as simple as you go out and you kick a ball around the pitch. There's so much that goes into it. So I'm really excited for the season. I'm excited for what he can do. I think you just look at the signings being announced recently. It looks like he's got a lot of bodies back that were important last year, and he's added a few from the academy. So I think it's going to be a good season. I'd be optimistic for the team. I'd be optimistic for Owen. I think he can do well here.
And Owen is, like, he's very, very highly thought of. You know, that's the other part. He's not some total unknown. You know, just because somebody doesn't know his name doesn't mean he hasn't, you know, been successful in the coaching game. He's in America for a long, long time, coaching and playing. He obviously played in the League of Ireland. Only for injuries, when he went over to West Ham as a kid, things probably would have turned out very differently for him. He'd done 2 ACLs in a couple of years, which just, you know, people don't come back from that, especially then. Which I'm probably putting a few years on poor own by saying back then, but he is really highly thought of. He was in the academy set up before he took this job, so he's familiar with the club, and he's familiar with a lot of those players that have been re-signed and signed up. So we can only pass on our best wishes to Owen, and the squad for the season. I did actually just, I have a squad list for the Women's Premier Division side, so I was keeping tabs on them because it can be a difficult process going back through the Twitter account to kind of fax them all together. So as of today, so we're 6 o'clock on the 22nd of January, that squad list for the Women's Premier Division looks like Pearl Slattery, Kerry Lettman, Megan Smith-Lynch, Rachel Graham, Rebecca Devereaux, Hannah Healy, Nadine Clare, Nia Hannan, Lucy O'Rourke, Maggie Pearce, Christy Gray, Kiva Keenan, Jess Gargan, Mia Dodd, Leah Doyle, Alex Kavanagh, Noelle Murray, Katie McCarron, Courtney Maguire, Gemma Quinn and Amanda McQuillan. And at a quick scan through that list, experience and youthful exuberance in abundance, would you say?
Yeah, it's an incredible mix of players there. Like, you have, there's a real learning opportunity there for the young players. And, you know, you have the likes of, as you said, Pearl, Kiva Keane and Noel, even like there's so much experience there that you can take and go forward. And you just look at the potential of that side, especially with the young players coming through. I think you shoot for the stars and see where you land, but I'd have a lot of faith in the side doing well, and I'm really, really excited for the season.
Yeah, Owen actually said something interesting at the fans forum. Obviously, he was present, the manager was there, the men's manager, Damien Duff, was also there. Owen said something really interesting when he was asked, you know, about his goals for the season. He said there's 20% more in that squad than what there was last year in terms of, you know, he thinks he can get 20% more than what was there last year. And I mean, 20% more is going to be enough to win a double. So hopefully Reds can do a double on that side, maybe pick up a trophy on the men's side as well. It could be a massive year all around. There were other bits and pieces in that off-season. Probably the most, in terms of on-the-pitch stuff, look, there's been transfers left, right, centre. We'll rattle through those for the men's team now shortly. But Luke Byrne obviously made the decision. Can only imagine how difficult it was for him to retire. He's just had long-standing injuries and he was in constant pain trying to get ready for games and prepare. And it's a mark of the man that he went through what he did just to try and get that jersey on him on a Friday night. The work he went through was just incredible. People will never know what he was going through just to even be able to do the bench for the club. Obviously, an outgoing Luke Byrne meant, and from now on, Luke Byrne will no longer be the retired player. He'll be the technical director from now on. So, Luke, that's the only time I'm going to refer to you as the retired Luke Byrne. You're now the youthful technical director. But he left, obviously, a chasm in the dressing room. It was always going to be. The manager had a choice to make. I believe it came down to three candidates in the end. For me, he definitely came out with the right one in the Burtman, Mark Coyle.
Yeah, definitely. I think Coyler is, I think anyone really in that squad, like there's a lot of leadership there. And as the manager said, it's not just the person that's the loudest that you get the leadership with. You look at, you know, Shane Griffin, you mightn't hear him as much, but there's leadership qualities there. And he was in consideration. And when he did take the armband last year, he led that team by example, I think it's fair to say. And again, Mark Coyle, brilliant when he took the armband. He took the armband in away to Rovers, I think it was. And he's just one of those that he leads by example on the pitch. He lets his game do the talking, but he's also not afraid to shout. And he's a big personality. I think, you know, just Mark Coyle, the person, is incredible. Mark Coyle, the player, even better. So, look, the manager, it's not an easy choice. It's not a choice I would have liked to have. But I do agree. I think he's made the right choice with Mark Coyle.
And it was interesting because we obviously had the sit-down, right, with Mark Coyle. And he didn't seem surprised. I think he seems a bit taken aback by how much probably it's flipped for him in the last couple of years. Like, I mean, when he came here, and I don't mind, I'll say it over and over again, I thought he was just a kicker when he came first. That's what he looks like. And I thought, oh, here we're just in for some kind of hatchet man who's going to run around and tackle. But the amount that man has grown as a footballer in the last couple of years is incredible. That's obviously down to the staff. I'm sure Davey Mack as a midfielder is a huge influence on him. Joey O'Brien and Duffer with their experience. But I think he's the perfect candidate. I love, it's a stupid thing, but I love a centre midfielder as a captain because he's right in the midst of things all the time. He loves a challenge. I think he's starting to understand now what the club is all about. And like, he's not taking that role lightly. You were there and we interviewed him. And I mean, he genuinely seems quite honoured and privileged to have the armband. And like, he's, myself, yourself, Mark and Darren were talking in the bar at the time, and this was at the interview, we were just out on the piss, just so everyone's clear on that one. But he spoke about how, you know, he had kind of touched base with Luke, and Luke had filled him in on, you know, what it meant to people, and, you know, people are working hard all week, and it all comes down to that Friday night. And I think we're definitely in safe hands with Mark. It's probably more than fair to say. So, look, he's been a familiar face for the last couple of years. A few not so familiar faces in the door. Well, look, we'll rattle through the outgoings shortly, but just as a quick blitz, give me your quick takes on these at the end of the list, Ben. So, Lorcan Healy, Sean Gannon, John O'Sullivan, Keith Ward, Liam Burt, John Martin, Dean Williams, and then Lewis Temple and Luke Brown obviously have come back from loans. What did you make of the signing so far?
Really, really happy with the business in the off season. I think one thing it screams straight away and it pops out at you is experience, leadership, and just a winning mentality. Like, you have Sean Gannon, a serial winner. Keith Ward, also another one. Like, this is something I think we have a very young core, and I think we definitely benefit from having those kinds of players in the dressing room. And then, look, you're losing Jack Moylan, a massive, massive loss, and something that's very difficult to replace. But you're bringing in, you know, John Martin, who can do a job, and Liam Burt, as you said, when we did the Coiler sit down, you were like, fell down a bit of a rabbit hole, and you're watching a bit of Liam Burt, and just the quality he possesses, he cuts in, and the finishes, it's just something to add to what we already have up front, you know, returning Sean Boyd, hopefully, Matty Smith as well. Like, there's a lot of quality in this side, and those signings will just improve it.
Yeah, you mentioned there about Liam Burt. I mean, I've been in a Shelburne rabbit hole for a couple of months at this stage. If I could tell you the amount of times Vanessa has looked at me on the laptop and be, what are you doing? You are in a world of your own there. But between teaching myself the seeding system for Europe and doing stats on new players and old players, and I lost my mind a little bit, to be totally honest with you. But you're talking like about winning mentality. The trophies that Sean Gannon has won in his career, it's an incredible tally. It really is. Like, his European experience to beat the band, you know, he's had, like, I think I'll be doing well to remember this off the top of my head, Ben, but as if you didn't hear me flicking through the pages. 10 league titles Sean Gannon has, and I know I heard before he doesn't count one of them because he was at Pats at the time and he didn't really play, but he's won 4 leagues with Rovers, 5 with Dundalk, 3 cups with Dundalk, 3 league cups with Dundalk, 3 President's Cups, 2 with Dundalk, 1 with Rovers. He was in 6 PFAI Team of the Years in a row, going from 2014 to 2019. More than 50 European appearances, nearly 300 league appearances. Like, you're not going to get more experience. And the other thing that I noted in the whole lot of it is, he was very rarely injured. So consistent, consistently playing, consistently starting games, affecting games. I know I would straight away, or most people would probably lean on Liam Burt as the kind of marquee one just because he's so talented. I mean, even the preseason friendly against, who was that one against? Bray or Cam Teeny, whatever they were. We'll get on to them later. They're a separate part, Bray will be. But some of the stuff Liam Burt was pulling out, even in that friendly, just little, he gets you off your seat, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that. But Sean Gannon is so tall. I don't know whether you were there for his photos or his launch or anything. Or I know I haven't seen any of the friendly games yet, I don't think, but he's a giant of a man. And I don't know why I never thought he was, but absolute giant of a bloke. But he could just be so important. He could be a wing back in that system. He could play wide of a back three, which we're known to play as well. It's kind of style of play is nearly breaking between two different formations where you're in and out of the ball. Like, he just so well rounded, so important. There's not a single Rovers fan had a single bad thing to say about him when he left Rovers, which I would probably say is a good sign. Actually, while we're here, Ben, talking about the opinion that your former club supporters have of you, John O'Sullivan. Honest opinions, when you seen the announcement of John O'Sullivan to the Reds, what did you think?
Personally, I said, grand. I was happy enough with it, because you can see, like, what Duffer, Joey, Davey Mack, like, those lads, even, like, Mero as well, you can see what they do to a player. And if they have a player that buys in, they can really transform that player. So, if you look at raw quality, yeah, I think John O'Sullivan has a bit of quality about him, and I think the lads will get a lot out of him. But I'd understand that, from what you've seen and heard from across the way, that maybe he's not going to be great. You can be a bit apprehensive, but I think, look, as you said earlier, like, Duffer's not going after someone that he doesn't want. So there's something behind it. There's reasoning behind it. They think they can get something out of it, and I'd be fairly confident that they would get something out of him.
Yeah, see, like, that's what I would always go back to, and I mentioned it there about when Harry Wood and Will Jarvis signed, that you have to just kind of trust the staff and the manager that if they really thought, like, Shelbyville made him out to be like this bad egg, and, you know, oh, he's this, that, and the other, and shouldn't be anywhere. He's the worst player that's played for the club. I've seen that bandied about from up the road as well. I have full confidence that John O'Sullivan will have a massive impact on the year. It's just when you look back, like, I was looking through his career in England, he's played at decent level again, so consistently in teams, came through at Blackburn, done great things there. He's one that I really think could shock a few people, because if anything is going to grab that extra, you know, 30-40% out of a player, I think it's definitely going to be Duffer and Joey, whether it's out of fear or respect or what it's out of, I don't know, but I'd be quite confident that he's going to come up when he's needed. We could go through all the individual signings. Like, Keith Ward's another one where I know a lot of people scoffed at that one. A lot of people from outside the club kind of, Keith Ward, if you're aiming to, you know, push on and qualify for Europe again and blah, 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 is Keith Ward the type of man you want? It's an underrated thing, but the importance of a good dressing room, and Keith Ward seems to tick that box.
Yeah, like, he's well liked everywhere he goes by all accounts, but I think he still has a lot to give on the pitch. Like, he could have, when we played Dundalk, he cut us open a few times. Like, he's that quality, that quality there.
Yeah,
like,
he set up one of the goals in Oriel with that cross. He put in an unbelievable cross in Oriel, yeah.
Like, he absolutely has quality there. Like, if you have someone running behind a Liam Burt or a Matty Smith, I'd put money on him finding them. So, I think he has a lot to give, and he's definitely more than just a dressing room player, but I think he will be massive for that. And I think that's one thing Duffer and, like, the lads always pride themselves in, is how positive the dressing room is and, you know, the environment that they aim to create. And it is very much a welcoming environment for any player, I'd imagine.
Yeah, and a big thing last year, and it's where we fell down, and probably through nobody's fault. Like, look, we had injuries with Matty Smith and Sean Boyd in the final third. That can't be helped. It's just, that's football. That's the way it goes sometimes. But if you're talking about depth and giving your bench a little bit more, like, you're talking, like, the difference, it's no disrespect to Bemi Arubi, who's obviously gone to Waterford, but I'd rather be bringing a Keith Ward on in a game who might be able to unlock a defence and pull out, you know, a game-winning pass, or he could pull out a free kick, or, you know, could just come up with a little bit of magic. Like, he only started 5 games for Dundalk last year. He was predominantly used off the bench, but he looked very sharp when I seen him in the AUL. So you just don't know where he's going to fall into the whole thing. John Martin and Dean Williams were obviously the other attacking players. Williams was probably one that I kind of went, oh, didn't really see that one coming. But again, it's another one who he seemed to be going quite well last year, and then he got an injury and then just kind of struggled on the back of that. But that's a team kind of running through the signings. You know, they weren't really regular starters for their clubs. Taking out probably the exception to that is John Martin. He would have played an awful lot for Dundalk, but like, they are kind of, it's nearly like this might be the wrong way of phrasing this, and it's meant in the nicest way possible, like the gang of misfits kind of thing. Like, Liam Burt was kind of injured at Rovers, and everyone was always like, oh, Liam Burt's not even playing, and I know Shelbyville got a good laugh out of him not playing after moving there.
Yeah.
Keith Ward was the same, couldn't really buy a start. John O'Sullivan, I mean, was getting a horrible stick off his own supporters. Sean Gannon struggled to get into the Rovers team. Like, I think there's an awful lot, they said on the pod last year, there's an awful lot to come from a player with point to prove. Look at Jack Moylan. I mean, he turned his career around. He was kicked out of balls basically by Keith Long, and then he's turned around now 2 years later, and he's playing in the third tier of English football. So that's not a bad old turnaround. But John Martin and Dean Williams, what did we make of those signings? I'm rambling, Ben. Stop me when I'm rambling.
No, you're grand. I think you touched on it there. Sean Boyd, Matty Smith, big losses at that stage of the season. And I think the more depth, the better. Look, you can't put a lot on young Bemmy. Like, very hard to come in and impact a game, especially at his age with his experience. You just, it's a thankless job almost. You come on and do something, you're the best player in the world. You come on and do nothing, you're the biggest villain out there. But the manager will do his homework. He said it when he spoke about Jack, and Jack has said it, that he sat there watching Jack Moylan clips on his iPad and said, yeah, we need to sign this fella. So I can't imagine he's looking at these players and thinking, just bring them in. He's doing his homework. He knows what he needs. He knows exactly what the squad needs. And I think depth was something maybe where we dropped points last year and a few of those draws that we could have turned into maybe 3 points if we had that little bit extra quality coming off the bench. And I think these lads have it.
It definitely seems that way. It seems like we feels a bit more rounded and a few more options. Like, obviously you're going to have a fully fit Brian McManus is going to be back in the fold as well, who missed an awful lot of last season through injury. Jad Kiki is the same. Obviously Matty Smith, Sean Boyd. I just cannot wait to have a fit Sean Boyd and Matty Smith again. I just think they're so effective. Like, Matty Smith is just something so different. He can kind of do everything. Boydie is just a nightmare. I don't know how centre-halves play against him, because he's just a nightmare. He's a pain in the arse. I mean, like, you'd be listening to some of the stuff that he's saying to people on the pitch as well, going, Jesus, what is he on about? But he's getting in people's heads.
He throws himself about. Like, he doesn't just, like, he's not your traditional target man where you'll stand there and he'll wait for a ball to feet and he'll try and play it out, or he'll try and turn in. Like, he'll run at players, he'll press them like his life depends on it, and he's like sliding in trying to get the ball, and he's won the ball back a few times doing that. Like, he's a nightmare to play against for centre half, I imagine. Like, he just throws himself around everywhere. And Matty Smith, like, if he drops into midfield, he gets the ball, he's running at you, good luck, because he's very powerful. He's very direct, and he is very hard to knock off the ball when he does have it in his head that he's just going to drive at you. So that kind of quality, to be reintroducing that to the team, bringing it back, and then the new signings, it just is that little bit of depth and experience that we haven't had. Because, look, we're a very young side the last few years, and I think the lads have really come into their own. You know, Matty Smith, an abundance of experience, especially in the Premier Division. And it's almost like a new signing, I think, when you get them back.
Oh, it is, 100%. Especially because they're so they're such effective players. Like, there's other players that could get injured and, you know, they could come and go and you don't really miss them. But there were so many games last year you'd look at it and go, oh, Matty Smith would cause mayhem here. Or Boydie would cause chaos if he came on here or if he was starting against those centre-halves. And look, in the end, it forced Jack Moylan into that kind of false nine, I don't know, kind of main leading attacker. And that didn't work out too badly for us in the end. But I just think what would have been if the other two boys around them had been fit for the year, and God knows what we could have done, but maybe we might just do it this year. You never know. You mentioned there, like, about, well, we mentioned about signings and bodies that came in. We did lose a lot. Like, there was an awful lot of outgoings. I mean, I have them on the list here. You've got Harry Fisk, Luke Byrne, Connor Kane, Andy Quinn, J.R. Wilson, David Torre, Cabral, A. Dervin's officially gone, Jack Moylan, Harry Wood, Will Jarvis, Bemi Arubi, Kyle Robinson, obviously Gav Hodgins has gone out on loan. It's a lot of bodies, but rattling through that list, outside of the obvious ones, you know, Moylan, Wood, Jarvis, Luke Byrne, is there anyone on that list that you kind of go, oh, I'm raging we lost him?
Like, player-wise, quality-wise, and kind of where we're heading as a side, I think you just have to look and say, are they capable of doing what we need them to do? And just a lot of it came down to we've better players in these positions, and that's really what it boiled down to. And look, I wish every player all the best. A lot of, like, the lads that went to back to England, and Jack, obviously, massive losses. But, like, Connor Kane was a good player. Really like Connor. I thought he was very unlucky with his injury, but I think Drogheda would be a great place for him. I think JR as well was a big loss, but again, he was in and out of the team. Cabral came in, and obviously he had that massive impact where it kept him in the team for a little bit longer. And I think JR will do well in Sligo. But I think we've signed well. We've strengthened where we need to strengthen. And I think the squad is looking good going into the new season.
I have to be honest, obviously, you know, Luke and Jack, those kind of bigger influences on the pitch, say, you're sad to see them go. I was actually really sad to see JR go in the end. I think I had an unknown rivalry with JR for about a season and a half that I didn't know about, but yeah. In fairness, Darren told me last week that I said on Monday's podcast last year that JR would be doing well to be playing football in a year's time, which was unbelievably harsh. I must have had a bad day that day. I don't know where I was going coming out with that, but we got all that sorted in the end. Myself and JR did, so we're all friends now. But just a classy fella. Like, he sent a text to the lads when he left just to say thanks for everything, and he was looking forward to seeing us again. And that's usually a mark of a man that, you know, goes out of his way to touch base with people before he leaves. As you say, I think he'd do really well at Sligo. I'd be shocked if he's not a regular right full for them starting. Really, really hope it works out for JR, other than when they play us, obviously. But
goes without saying.
Oh, of course, yeah. Sad to see him go. The same with Connor. Like, Connor Kane was a really good left back. He just, I think it was just circumstances with his injury, and
yeah,
don't think the manager could kind of guarantee him game time. That's what he was looking for. So look, there's no, you know, there's no real hard feelings with any of those players, which is funny because over the years there's been lads that have left this club and you've gone, thank God they are gone, they were septic. I have to say, nobody really in that mould there. The only one, Kyle Robinson, got his huge move to the UK, signed for Arbroath. So all the best to Kyle with that one. Those agents, huh? Those agents that do you very well.
Work magic.
Yes, they do work magic. I need an agent myself. We did get a question in on Instagram. And yeah, I just thought it was an interesting one, and I purposely didn't give you the heads up on this one. I gave you the heads up on some stuff, but not this one.
Great.
Yeah, so what? If anyone wants to hear a man sweat through his microphone, turn your volume up now. But Ross Wilders wanted to know, if there was one more player that you could sign, who would it be and why?
Oh, Jesus!
Now I'll give you a minute to kind of gather your thoughts. I came up with one earlier. Now keep it semi-realistic. You're not going to turn around and say being Kevin De Bruyne or something stupid.
Well, I can't say Jack Moylan now.
We'll leave that to other podcasts. I mean, Jack is probably a fair answer. My answer was actually Greg Sloggett.
Ooh,
just as an extra body in the middle, he can cover at centre half. He's a good midfielder. He's always played really, really well against us. And I mean, I'd be surprised if he didn't want out of there, to be totally honest.
Not that
the best thing about Dundalk is the way out.
Yeah, now if I was going realistic, I actually would look to one of the Hull lads, probably Will Jarvis. I think he could just look. You talk about depth, and especially with a busy summer schedule, it's something that could maybe be looked at. But he was electric when he got the ball. Like the manager said, it's one of those kind of styles that you don't see anymore. That direct winger that they just lightning quick pace, they just run at you and cause you issues. I think he was great when he was here, and it's one I definitely probably like. It's one I'd like to see back in a red jersey anyway.
The Jarvis one, it's funny that you mentioned him, because our friends in Reds Independent got onto us on Instagram as well and asked us to talk about Will Jarvis, basically. I presume they mean whether he'll be back or not. I have no idea. Everyone seems to think that we know everything, Ben, whereas I think we're actually the last people to find out stuff, and we would prefer it to stay that way.
Yeah, then we don't get any of the blame.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. The less you know, the less you can leak. So, I've seen other people from other clubs mentioning Will Jarvis going somewhere else in the League of Ireland. Look, it's one of them. I'd be gutted to see him play for anybody else, to be totally honest. I'd be surprised if the choice was his, he'd go anywhere else. It's obviously a European campaign. He knows what he's going to get here. At the same time, I wouldn't blame the lad if he did go somewhere else. I'm sure there's influence on him as well. If he's going on loan somewhere, he probably has to go where he's told to go. But could you see him togging out for another club?
I wouldn't like to see it. I just, again, as you said, I don't think it makes too much sense. Like, he knows the system. He knows the manager. He knows the staff. He knows the players. He knows exactly the situation he's getting into. It's not like when he came over first, he was just being dropped into a club. I remember going down to meet him for the first time. We were away to Cork. And he literally just been dropped down to the stadium from the airport. And I was like, are you registered? And he's like, yeah, I think so. I'm like, oh, great. Here we go. And he was just thrown in at the deep end. So you'd imagine that with all the stuff he knows about the club, and again, as you said, the choice was his, that he wouldn't want to come back here. But as you've also accurately pointed out, agents, wonderful things. So you just never know. But he is definitely one that I'd be delighted to see back in a red jersey. I think he'd add a lot to that attack. I think he'd add a lot of depth. But it would just mean that if we do get those kind of injuries, we could manage them a little bit better.
Yeah, I'd agree. Ben, I had myself muted there. So I was about to come in at that lovely little gap you left open for me. And I was talking to myself. And you start talking and I went, oh no, I forgot to unmute myself. But on a slight tangent, right? As I say, I was down a major rabbit hole over the last couple of months. I needed to get out of the house to some kind of football activity. But what referee would you say booked the Reds the most last season?
Is it too obvious to go Rob Harvey?
Correct. It was Rob Harvey. Would you also believe, Ben, we didn't lose a game that he reffed us in last year in the league?
That is probably the most unbelievable thing.
Isn't that an interesting stat? Very, very, very interesting.
Are you sure? Definitely not.
Yes, we won two games and we drew three. Two wins at home to Sligo and UCD, a draw at home to Sligo, a draw at home to Derry, and a draw away to Bowles. So there you go. Yeah, Rob Harvey, very kind to the Reds last year.
Maybe we can add him back to the Christmas card list then.
Well, he was never off my Christmas card list. I can tell you that now for a fact, Ben. But on the subject of referees, are you ready to be the ref, Ben?
Oh, dear.
See the way I said I prep Ben for some things, not for all. This, now we're going to see our metal. I have no problem admitting I'm a little bit of a referee sympathiser. I don't mind saying that. I don't believe, or it's in very rare circumstances that a referee will cost you a game of football. Look, a 95th minute and he gives a penalty, that's never a penalty, and you lose 1-0, okay, maybe. But it's quite rare that kind of stuff happens. So, everyone that comes onto this podcast, Ben, I'm going to make them be a ref for one game. For one decision, I should say.
You couldn't have waited until you got someone else to try it. You had to just spring this on me.
Ben, you made yourself available for the first part of the new season. What can I say? The other Clearys weren't so generous with their time. So look, this is the way it is. Are you ready for your question?
Go on.
Ben, now listen carefully. You do have options.
Okay.
And I will point out, this idea is blatantly robbed from DL Redscast, which was the original official podcast of Shelburne Football Club. So I am well aware there might be a bit of copyright or that type of thing involved here, but look, we're all friends at the end of the day. Ben, a goal kick is taken and it deflects off a teammate standing in the penalty area and goes into the goal. What decision should the referee make? So to give you a visual and to give the listeners a visual, Conor Cairns is setting up to take a goal kick. It's on the ground. And I don't know, Paddy Barrett sees Damien Duff coming at him with a massive stick and moves in the way to try and escape. Conor Cairns kicks the ball. It bounces off Paddy Barrett and goes into the net. What happens?
Ooh. Where's my options?
I was about to say, do you want your options? Your options are A, the referee stops play and the goal kick is retaken. B, the referee stops play and restarts the match with a corner. C, the referee allows the goal to stand. Or D, the referee stops play and an indirect free kick is awarded to the opposing team.
Indirect free kick.
Are you going to stick with that answer?
Oh, no, don't tell me. No. Yes.
Ben, you are incorrect.
No way.
And I am now on a mission to try and make sure that everyone gets these questions wrong. And I'll be able to appeal to every referee that comes into Talca and say, look, I know how difficult your job is. So at least somebody understands. The correct answer, Ben.
You just want to kiss the arse of a lot of referees. That's all right. No, just remember who your friends are.
You never know when you might need a referee. The correct answer is the referee stops play and the goal kick is retaken.
What?
Yes. So if for whatever reason Conor Cairns boots a ball off the arse of Paddy Barrett and rebounds back into their net, bit of time waste than I would have thought. Yeah, the referee stops play and the goal kick is retaken. Ben, do you want to try and redeem yourself?
I don't really know.
I'm purely doing this to make you squirm. And your brother will also squirm because we are getting close to the hour mark here. But do you want one more referee question?
I feel like you're going to give it to me anyway, so.
You'd be right. Ben, during the match, the ball strikes the assistant referee or linesman. And as a result, does not completely cross the touchline. What decision should the referee make? A, award a drop ball. B, allow play to continue. C, award an indirect free kick to the team whose player last touched the ball. Or D, award a throw-in to the team that did not play the ball last. So, I don't know. What have we got here? Gav Malloy tries to switch the play. Overhits it, heads towards the corner flag. The referee, or the linesman, has tried to avoid a bourbon biscuit that's been thrown at him. Steps onto the pitch slightly. The ball hits the linesman and stays on the pitch. What does the referee do? Does he give a drop ball? Does he let play on? Does he give an indirect free kick? to the team who kicked the ball, i.e. Shells, or does he give a throw-in to the opposition?
You couldn't have picked, like, more well-known laws in football and, like, stuff that you might see every week.
That wouldn't be fun, Ben. That just wouldn't be fun.
Because I'm going to get two out of two wrong. You're going to make me look like a fool. I'm never coming back on the pod ever again.
Ben, I'm quite sure your predictions for the league will make you look enough of a fool, so don't worry.
Ah, ideal. I feel like a drop ball is logical.
Ben.
Oh, dear.
Do you want to stick with your answer?
Live by the sword, die by the sword.
You're wrong. Play continues. Yeah.
What do you mean play continues?
Play continues. If it hits the linesman, it just stays on the pitch. Play on.
That is ridiculous.
Well, Ben, I don't make the rules. FIFA make the rules. Moving swiftly on. This will either be a popular segment, Ben, or it will go down like a lead balloon. God only knows. Okay. We'll know probably by Wednesday. I'm sure a few people will get on giving out to us. We are approaching the hour. So we've two more things to do. We need to give our quick predictions for the year. We're going to run through a full league table. But before we do that, Ben, the best thing that was born out of me handing this podcast over last season, people actually were prepared. They'd done research. They tried to set up little segments in the pod. One of them was the Richie Rankings. So to explain to anyone that's not familiar with the Richie Rankings, are you a Richie Baker, a good guy, solid fella, had a good week, didn't cause anyone any issue? Or are you Richie Winters? You steal sweets from children. You cost people cup final appearances. And you're just generally a bit of a misery. So I'll let you start. Ben, this week or over the course of the off season, who has been your Richie Baker?
Is it too predictable to say Mark Coyle? I feel like...
Oh, no. We had a conversation earlier about not agreeing with each other on things. I've gone Mark Coyle myself.
You didn't.
No, I'll change mine. You go on. You go on. Explain your answer.
I just think Mark Coyle named his club captain. He's great year. He's developed so much as a player. Great fella. Just all around. Can't say a bad word about him. So, yeah, definitely a Richie Baker.
Yeah, I'll take that. I obviously agree. My Richie Baker is actually Mickey O'Rourke for stepping in when the club needed somebody to step in, conducted himself brilliantly at the fans forum on Thursday, spoke really well, spoke really honestly, and I had a horrifically awkward encounter with the man that only Darren Cleary knows about, but I'm going to share it with everyone. I was walking out of the bar in Tolka before the fans forum had started, and this fella came in, was walking into the bar, had a hat on, and I gave it to, "How are you?" Not knowing who it was. Ben, that man was the majority shareholder in Shelburne Football Club. I'd never met him before. I gave him the "How are you?" And then I got officially introduced to him later on, and it was horrifically awkward. So I felt like I needed to give him something to make up for it. But my Richie Baker for this week is Mickey O'Rourke. The more important one, Ben, your Richie Winters, who is it?
I did give
you time to prep this, by the way.
You did. I'm going to go with a more topical one. I had one that I was going to say, but I'm going to leave it. I feel like Joey Barton is fair to say.
Of football.
If we're going football world, I'm going him, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Ben, Joe, I did not, you know what, I never, ever, ever thought Joey Barton would be mentioned on the 1895 podcast. I really didn't. We've had Peter Schmeichel. Didn't think Joey Barton would come up, I have to be honest.
I had another one, but I feel like it's going to be yours, so I changed.
Right, well, in the interest of fairness, my Richie Winter. I don't even know, is it Richie Winter or Winters? I haven't a clue. I don't really care either, to be totally honest. But my Richie Winters is... Shelburne can celebrate all they want, but next week we're bringing that fucking trophy here. Declan Devine.
That was mine, but I knew that.
He is my Richie Winter. And you know what? why would you say something so stupid? That's my... They lost the cup at that moment, in my opinion.
I knew it. I have it written down beside me that I had Mark Coyle, and beside it, as my Richie Winder, was Declan Devine. And then in case you said Mark Coyle, I wrote Harry Wood. And then underneath, I wrote Joey Barton, because I couldn't think of anything else.
Look, Ben.
I panicked.
We're bound to agree on something eventually, and we will both agree that Declan Devine has to be the Richie Winter for this week, 100%.
They're bringing the cup back. It's fine. Oh, wait. Whoops.
Look, everyone loves, well, they either love or hate Damien Duff for his sound bites, and he says mad stuff. He's never said anything that mad. I just thought it was just such a silly thing to say. So, so silly.
Especially in the lead up to a big game where you're not going in as a favourite. It's disgrace. Like, how could you think you can get away with that?
No, I don't know. I don't know. Very, very strange. But, yeah, so that is the Richie rankings for the week. Last up, Ben. League predictions. We'll rattle run 1 to 10. We'll be absolutely wrong come the end of the season, there's no doubt about it. But look, it'll be a stick to beat you with, like Damon Duff bet Paddy Barrett. So, he confirmed at the Fans Forum, that's pretty much exactly as it was reported in the Irish Independent. That is how it went down. Damon Duff followed an army crawling Paddy Barrett across Portmarnock Beach, baiting the shite out of him with a stick, and saying that Bo Barrett, who was Paddy's 10-month-old child, was a better crawler than his father. So, it's 100% true. Ben, your top three, please.
We're only doing top three.
Well, no, we'll break it down.
Right. I have Rovers, Pats, Shells.
Oh, at least we're not totally the same. I've gone Rovers, Derry, Shells. I think Rory Keaton will flop.
That's a big call.
Yeah, but... I know, but an awful lot of hype around him signing. I had an incredible year last year, especially what he went through off the pitch. To do what he did on it was in a Maloge and Cork team was incredible. But I just think he didn't set the world alight at any of the other clubs he was at. I think everyone lost their mind. When he signed for Pats, everyone seemed to think, oh, like that'll put Pats above Rovers. Just don't see it. Rovers re-signed Aaron McInniff the other week, got Jack Byrne a new contract. They've had other experienced bodies on new contracts. Don't see anyone touching them. Now, I said this last year, and they were ran closer than I probably thought they would have been in the end, but I'm definitely going Rovers to win it, Derry runner-up, and the Reds third. That's what I'm going for. I reckon Pats fall out at top three. If Shells would qualify for Europe again, it would be an incredible season. Regardless of whether it's second, third, fourth, and through the back door of the Cup, or whether we win the Cup, if we qualify for Europe again, fantastic season. Give me your bottom two, Ben. So who's going to finish bottom? Who's the basement club?
Waterford.
Oh, I agree. I've got Waterford as well. And who is your playoff spot?
Sligo Rovers. I know.
Ooh, Reggie won't be happy with that. I hope Sligo don't get relegated just purely for the away game, to be totally honest.
I do love an away day in Sligo. Now, last time we were there, look, the less said, the better. You weren't. Were you there the last time we were in Sligo?
Ooh, was that tonight? You stayed the night?
Yes, and poor Reggie got ran out of the hotel. But look, we'll save that story for another day.
Well, I wasn't there, obviously, but he was basically all got thrown out of the hotel, did you not? But not it wasn't your own fault. Like, you didn't, it's not like you wrecked the hotel or anything like that. There was a bit of a job's worth in the hotel, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that. my playoff spot club is Dundalk. I think they're all over the shop. They are all over the place.
I wrestled with that one a lot. That was the only one I was fairly unsure of.
I just think there's a bad atmosphere around there at the moment. If you have a bad start, that only festers, gets worse and worse and worse. on paper, the squad list is very unappealing. Any decent body they've had, like Pat Hoban, I refuse to call him Hoban. Pat Hoban has gone up to Derry. Lose a player like that, any club loses a player like that, you're going to struggle. I'm going Dundalk second last, Waterford bottom. So Ben, rattle me now 3 or 1 to 10 quickly.
So 1 to 10, I have Rovers, Pats, Shells, Derry, Drogheda, Bowes in 6th, Galway, Dundalk, Sligo and Waterford.
Oh, we're pretty different, thank God, thank the Lord. We're not talking.
Okay, that doesn't bode well for me.
No, well, it doesn't bode well for me either. We're all spoofers here, Ben. It's the aim of the game. I went Rovers to win it, Derry second, the Reds third, Pats fourth, Galway fifth, because I just think they're going to be horrible to play against. And I think it'll be very difficult to go to Galway and pick anything up down there. What's that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sligo sixth, Bowes seventh. Similar to Dundalk, I just think the atmosphere seems fairly toxic. Again, squad list wouldn't fill you with confidence. And if they start poorly, that crowd will turn quite quickly, I would think. And then Drogs 8th, Dundalk 9th, Waterford 10th. That's what I'm going with. Who's going to win the cup, Ben?
The Reds.
Oh, correct. That's the correct answer. We're all aboard the 2024 cup winning train. We didn't get to go in depth on Europe, actually, which we will eventually. That's an episode in its own right. What I will say on the European thing is we're more than likely not going to Belarus or, you know, Kazakhstan or Azerbaijan or anywhere mental like that. The Conference League draw has been regionalised the last couple of, like, since it's started. And now it's only, what are we, into the third year of it now, I think it is. It does be regionalised, so we're not going to go anywhere too mental. Not to be a downer, but it's a not an uninspiring list of countries, but it's meh. There's a few stinkers in there, let's just put it that way. We could be going paying mad money in Iceland or Faroe Islands or somewhere like that. Malta is probably the best outcome, but that will be a separate pod. Don't worry, we'll there'll be plenty of European content over the season. Look, it's 2006 last time we were in Europe. Just way, way too long. But we're back now. The pod is back. Ben, thank you for giving up your evening.
My pleasure. I'd always jump on. Well, now I'm a bit apprehensive with the referee questions, but you might see me back, hopefully, if I'm allowed. We'll see.
If you're allowed, does that mean if Darren lets you?
Yeah, basically, he might just put the foot down and say he wants back in, he'll sub back in, but I don't mind. I'll let him have the spotlight. He deserves it.
Well, the dictatorship of the Shelburne media team continues. Ben, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk to everyone next week. Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Thanks for listening to the 1895 podcast, the official podcast of Shelburne FC, Dublin's finest since 1895. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify, and subscribe now to never miss a new episode.